Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We welcome in the Hall of Famer, our good friend, the General John McClain, presented by HornSolutions.net, joining us for his weekly visit. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, guys. And then there's Mike Trout, who they had to pay him because he was so good and so popular, and he's been hurt, and they've been no better. One of the things I remember, I read the Cynodale's in-depth story about Bryce Harper, and when he signed with the Phillies, and what Seth was talking about, the calculations of what he would mean to the franchise, not just in ticket sales, but memorabilia, parking, beer, all that. Mm-hmm. They were more than happy to do it because it wasn't like he was going to cost them to lose money. He just hasn't made them into the team they thought he would.
Yeah, no, he's an MVP.
You know, the thing about Mike Trout being injured, though, too, is that, okay, if he had signed a five-year contract, he'd still be injured. So you can't – if Mike Trout ends up being injured for the rest of his 12-year contract, then obviously that would be a big deal. But I'm trying not to use Mike Trout's current situation as an argument against a long-term deal.
No, I agree. I'm not talking about just being injured this year. I'm talking about he has not made the Angels – any better since he's been there.
Yeah, no, he's answering.
It's not his fault.
You're right.
It's
right.
People they put on that team around him.
Yeah.
But they're also, look, they're like a top five revenue team every year, too. So they, like, I think as far as they care from a business standpoint, Mike, people bring their kids out to the ballpark to see Mike Trout. I'll pay money to, like, I go wide when Mike Trout, I try to make sure I go see Mike Trout when he comes into town. So that's where, on the business side of it, I get it. I think it makes total sense with Mike Trout.
John McClain joining us, presented by HornSolutions.net. We'll get more into the Astros as we
go. I got one more thing I want to say about Correa. One of the things that impresses me the most is you see him on the mound and he's talking to the pitchers.
Yeah.
You see him in the dugout and he's talking to his teammates. The fact that he's such an incredible leader, that's something else that has to be affected in the decision. And with you getting rid of Verlander and Greinke, and that's going to clear up what, like $68 million, something like that?
Between 55 and 60. They're not paying all of Greinke. I think it's like $59 million between the two.
So there's plenty there for Correa next season, his share and more. And but he brings so much more to the team besides what he does in the field and beside what he does at the plate.
No doubt. John McClain, presented by HornSolutions.net. John, we just got done talking to Nick Caserio, Texans general manager. One of the things we asked him about was Sunday's game and the decision-making, the process that goes into that, how involved he is in it. He said he's largely observing in those situations. He's there for input if they need it. That's been the big story all week, is the mishandling of the end-of-game situation that for the second time this year, David Culley said, I wish I had done something different the game before. What should the tolerance level be for mistakes that, let's face it, these are things that if they were made in real jobs in the real world, would be firing offenses in the real world.
Well, if you did that on every team that made bad clock management decisions, most of them would be fired. Till Andy Reid won his Super Bowl, Andy was blasted almost every week for his poor clock management decisions. And they're not going to fire Culley.
I'm not saying to fire Culley, but these are egregious mistakes.
And so they're doing exactly what they need to do. Davis Mills got better, and they're losing.
Okay.
They need to lose more. Davis Mills needs to keep playing. Not at the level he played against the Patriots, in which he played better than any rookie quarterback in Bill Belichick's 20 season, but he's got to continue to make progress. And fact is, the higher the pick, the better it's going to be for him.
Sean, I feel – John. John, I feel like there's been a change in tone, and I know you're gonna get angry at me for saying this.
I never get angry at you, Seth.
Okay, you're gonna make me angry in your response to this. I'm joking. It feels like over the last couple weeks, you've come more around on being full bore, full go. They should just, the smart thing to do is to lose as many games as possible. Is that, am I misreading that?
Nope, just like the Rockets, just like the Astros, and that's what the Texans need to do this season. It's a rebuilding season. They're trying to win, of course, but if they lose, there's a silver lining, and that's a higher draft choice, whether they use it on a quarterback or not, and it's looking more and more every week. Now, that could change when they start running around in their underwear, and the scouts are blown away by their arm strength and the way they throw with nobody covering or nobody pressuring them. But, yes, I think that this is a lost cause, just like the Rockets. Now everybody's fired up about the Rockets, and I would assume going into next season with high pick plus their all their picks, plus they hope to have a couple more high ones for Watson, that people would be pumped up going into camp.
Yeah, the benefit the Rockets have is there's actual faces to go with the rebuild now. You know what I mean? You watch Jalen Green play in the summer league, and there's, you know, Shingun looks like he might have been a steal at 16 for them and things like that. The Texans don't have any faces that feel like they're going to be around if and when this team starts winning again in 3 years.
Well, just like Green and Shingun, they're both first-year players. This time next year, the Texans will have a lot of first-year players.
Right,
that
right.
People will notice because they were high picks and get fired up about.
John McClain, presented by HornSolutions.net. Back to Davis Mills, and I know you said the optimal thing to see is they lose games, but Davis Mills plays really, really well. When we were talking to Nick a few moments ago, he left open the possibility that it could be Mills, it could be Taylor. We didn't expect
it. It's going to be Mills.
So my question was going to be, when Tyrod Taylor comes back, you think he sits and Mills plays?
Absolutely. Doesn't serve him any purpose playing Tyrod. He's here on a one-year deal. They know what he can do. Now, putting Mills down, if he continues to play well, would be asinine.
What if he doesn't? What if it looks more like the Buffalo game than the New England game?
Well, then it would be time to sit him down, let him watch for a while, and then play him again, say, after the bye week when they have 8 games left.
So you think it's going to be potentially a fluid situation, and they're not going to – you don't expect them to you know, think that Davis Mills absolutely needs to be out there, the highs and the lows and all of that. They're just going to try to play it by ear?
No, I think if it's like Buffalo, Sean mentioned Buffalo, that's as bad as you can get. I just don't think you'd have, if he makes a 100% reversal from what he did against the Patriots, then I think, no, you can't, because you could destroy his confidence. But one of the things people tell me over there is how his demeanor, the way he is behind the scenes, the way he is during games, he is totally blew off that Buffalo performance. None of the rest of us could. We had no indication he could play like that. No indication Chris Moore could play like that. And I'm eager to see, can somebody else play like that at Indianapolis? But, you know, the thing, Mills, as we said all along, they have to find out, can he play? And based on one game, he could, but he's got to put together a whole lot more.
What specifically, I mean, the numbers were great, obviously. What specifically did you like better that you saw from Davis Mills? I mean, everything was better than the Buffalo game, but compared to his body of work for the season, what's the improvement you saw against New England that you were most encouraged by?
He had one bad game with interceptions. That was the Bills. Against Carolina, no interceptions. One, Cleveland, and then none in this one. I thought the fact that they threw he had him throw on fourth down 3 times in a row, that was showing an awful lot of confidence in a guy who was terrible in his previous game. They showed confidence in him, and he rewarded them. He looked much more confident. They had him throwing on the run more. He threw the ball at people's feet. It's like Pep Hamilton, Tim Kelly, those guys did a tremendous job getting him ready in a week. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, no, it was a complete reversal. They did a nice job. You mentioned the 3 fourth downs, 3 for 3 on fourth down, all on Davis Mills' arm. He threw on all 3 of those fourth downs, which makes the decision on 4th and 4 at the 38 all the more curious in the third quarter. What did you think in that moment? You're watching from the press box.
Punt.
You said punt?
Punt. Punt him down there inside the 10, make a rookie take him 90 yards. I never thought they would go for it there. And they did the absolute worst thing they could do. Fairbairn have the worst day of his career, having tried the longest field goal of his career. And then, of course, the other one, as Cully admitted, he should have let him score, decline the penalty, get the ball back with 1:52 left, and have a chance to at least tie it.
Well, and if you were in the punt category of people, then you had to hate the fact that they could have just taken a delay a game there on fourth and four and instead burned a timeout to have Kyeme Fairbairn kick.
And the reason they did that is because Tunsil's on the field goal team. He did not run out when he was supposed to because of his hand, and whoever's his backup didn't run out there, so the clock ran out. It had nothing to do with strategy. It had to do with who wasn't on the field.
Okay, John McClain is in studio with us. He's presented by HornSolutions.net. We'll get to some more of what Nick Caserio had to say to Seth and I as we roll on here through the 8 o'clock hour. John mentions Laremy Tunsil. What are the scenarios along the offensive line as we move forward here with the Houston Texans? John McClain, brought to you by HornSolutions.net, in studio for his Wednesday visit. More with John next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Wednesday. John McClain, brought to you by HornSolutions.net, in studio with us. We'll get back to some Astros with John McClain here in the hour. He's in with us here.
Please.
As well. Yes, five straight ALCSs for the Houston Astros. Don't worry, John, but we got some things we got to check off the list here when it comes to your area of expertise. You're an expert at a lot of things, but you're the godfather when it comes to football. This Laremy Tunsil injury. What do you make of it? Do you think that Laremy plays through this thing? And what does this do to the offensive line? What do you think of the offensive line without Laremy out there on Sunday?
Jerron Christian, who played for him in preseason every game, which was good, who started after season last year at Washington, he's the guy. Somebody asked about Charlie Heck playing left tackle. I don't think that's what they would do because right now Marcus Cannon has a back injury. And anybody that's ever had a back injury, and I've had back surgery, knows how bad that can be. So they're not trying to get him out there and have him play through pain. They want him to get 100% before he comes back. So Heck's going to play right tackle. And Tunsil's going to try to play. He needs surgery. They would like for him to play and have the surgery after the season, but nobody knows till he gets out there and they do what they need to do to pad it up. But it's going to be a detriment to him because linemen have to use their hands so much. And so it wouldn't surprise me if he plays a couple of games or one game and it doesn't work out the way they want and he goes ahead and has the surgery.
Do you think that this flummoxes any potential trades? And by that, I mean, obviously it would flummox a trade. But do you think that the Texans were still very open to hearing Laremy Tunsil trade offers?
No, I don't know that they've gotten any Tunsil trade offers. I haven't heard that they have, and I don't think there's any way they would trade him, considering he's their best player and Cooks is number two.
Yeah.
So who's tradable right now?
Cunningham, I would think that that linebacker's playing very well. Zach's become a one- and two-down player. He's not as good playing outside in a 4-3 as he was inside in a 3-4. I don't know if it's the system, if it's him. But he's the first one I would look around and find a 3-4 team. And if that 3-4 team had injuries or that 3-4 team had an inside linebacker not playing as well, I would try to trade him. Did Bernard McKinney catch on with anybody?
I don't know. You know, I meant to look that up the other day. It would say in – I'll look up the Wikipedia.
That's weird. B-Mac, he got cut and then haven't heard another word for him. Maybe he's on somebody's practice squad.
It says he's a Wikipedia. Bernardrick Cornelius McKinney. That's an awesome name. Bernardrick Cornelius McKinney. An American football inside linebacker who is a free agent.
That's amazing. But
he's kind of a dinosaur, though, huh?
Yeah, I guess. I guess he is. But you could get him at the minimum, but he got a lot of money.
Yeah.
But Cunningham would be the first one I would think about.
What about, okay, so two other names. Menihue and Lonnie Johnson.
I don't know why they trade Lonnie when they're starting him now.
Rumors are bubbling up again yesterday.
Yeah, they've been, that goes back to training camp. And he was putting out some tweets about the Gruden situation, and people thought he's talking about the Texan situation. We interviewed him Monday. Couldn't have been better or more positive about his situation starting and making plays. He was cutting up about Justin Reed, costing him another interception, and so I don't think they have any interest in trading him. Charles Menihue, I don't understand what he's done that they would put him down and make him inactive. He was tied with Whitney Mercilus for the most quarterback hits, didn't have a sack. But whatever Charles didn't do, and Lovie Smith was not going to use him, so they made him inactive. I hope they make him active in this game and see how he bounces back.
Okay, so I asked Nick Caserio towards the end of our interview, what does Charles Menihue need to do? We had Nick Caserio on, if you missed it, in the 7 o'clock hour today. What does Charles Menihue need to do to make sure that he is active on game day moving forward?
It's the same for every player. Each week, really, nobody's entitled or guaranteed anything. So we have, you know, what we feel are enough good players, a lot of good players on this team, and every week it's going to be something different. So each week, every player has to focus on what can I do to prepare? What can I do to help the team? What can I give myself the best opportunity to go on the field and play on Sunday? And then we'll have those discussions during the week about who's going to play, who's going to be inactive. So it's really a week-to-week thing, but any player, it's not specific to any player. It's about consistency of performance, not only in the practice field, but everything else that goes into it. I'd say that's one of the things, going back to the earlier question that Seth asked, that's one of the things that we're looking for that is kind of unseen on a day-to-day basis. So really, it's any player. It's the same for each player. Just do what you can on a week-to-week basis to get yourself ready to play, be able to go out there and execute your assignment to the best of your ability, and go out in the field, and the players on the field need to be able to trust each other on either side of them. So whether it's week 4, week 6, week 12, week 16, that's never really going to change.
And the question Seth had asked, and it was a really good question earlier in the interview, was what are some of the things that are part of the process that we don't see? What can you, what can you do to enlighten us on those things? And I thought of Menihue immediately, Seth, when Nick was answering that question, and he's listing all the things like nutrition and, just film and working behind the scenes. I'm going, okay, well, there's probably part of the answer on some of these guys where we go, why is this guy buried on the depth chart? Why is this guy inactive on Sundays? It's all of those things that are probably somehow tethered to culture in some way.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, if you make plays on Sunday, you're going to play.
Okay, well, I mean, Menihue's been one of their better guys, though.
Yeah, but if he were, he wouldn't have been inactive. Yeah. Something he's doing, he's not performing the way they want, whether it's during the week or on Sundays, otherwise he'd be active.
Right, so the during the week part is the part. Because, he's made more plays on Sunday than other guys have, and they keep 7 or 8 guys active on game day. I mean, Jacob Martin's not doing squat out there, except getting his ass kicked up and down the field. So, that's the part that, I mean, we probably just won't find out, I suppose.
Yeah.
What about Tytus Howard? He's getting his ass kicked, too. Are they going to keep this experiment going on?
I would have moved him back to right tackle a long time ago. And admit you made a mistake and put Justin McCray at left guard or somebody else at left guard, because Tytus is just not playing well. Now, he did a good job in pass protection. He didn't allow pressure, but the penalty, inexcusable in that situation for a veteran player like Howard, and his run blocking has still been atrocious. He's not a guard.
No, he's not.
If they thought he was a guard early in his career, when they put him at guard early, they moved him to right tackle. He played well enough, made the all-rookie team, even though he missed half the season, and I didn't hear any complaints about him last season. But it's not an experiment. It's way beyond the experiment. It's just not working.
And I should clarify, Tytus Howard's been getting his butt kicked. Jacob Martin just isn't making an impact as much as I would have hoped. I think his lack of size, even though he put some weight on, his lack of size is just, it's hurting him. He's not fast enough and explosive enough to overcome that size so far. But Tytus, yeah, butt kicked. You're right. And John, I don't think Tytus wanted to be a guard. He was put in there. He did it because that's what the team is asking him to do. At some point, I almost worry, is it going to be as simple as him playing an entire year at guard and then getting back out to tackle and having a chance there? Or are they going to have to try to trade him off somewhere? It's getting to be... even if I were somebody that wanted the Texans to tank the entire year and not win a single more game... It's hard to watch what they're doing with Tytus Howard and see why that's helping anything out in the future.
I don't think it is, and they don't care where you draft it, how much money you make. If they think you should be gone, you'll be gone. And in his defense, Next Generation Stats had him this week. I think it was however many times he dropped back on pass protection. He didn't give up a pressure, but he struggled in run blocking again. And, of course, that huge mental mistake on the 2-yard line. If you think about the drop touchdown pass from Chris Moore,
yep,
a perfect pass from Davis Mills.
Yeah.
Being at the 2, having to settle for a field goal, it's amazing how close they came from blowing that high pick.
At a juncture in the game where I'm not saying you put the game away, but man, instead of 15-6, it's 19-6 or whatever it is. You know, like it's just they were leaving points out there on Sunday. That was discouraging. What did you think of Charlie Heck's performance on Sunday, John?
I don't remember. I'm typing,
yeah,
and tweeting, and we're way up there, and I'm trying to watch things, and I make mistakes on Twitter, and I notice it, I apologize, call myself a moron, and then go on, and I go back and watch the game, and I love James Lofton because I like him, but I also like his analysis. So I didn't hear anything bad about Charlie Heck about his performance.
John McClain, the Hall of Famer, the General, joins us each and every week on Wednesdays. He's presented by HornSolutions.net. We got to circle back to the Astros with John. Nobody here at the station has been watching Houston sports longer than John McClain. Where does this window of Astros dominance, where does this group line up across all sports here in Houston for John McClain? We'll talk about that with the General next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
All right, we got to talk a little Astros with John McClain. We'll get back to some of what Nick Caserio had to say in our interview with him earlier as well. A lot of football stuff still to get to as we head towards the top of the hour. John McClain, presented by HornSolutions.net. All right, so John, let's reset here. We recall Ryan Tepera, White Sox pitcher. We've not talked to you since he said these actual words. We know now how the Astros responded. They responded with weapons hot yesterday and 10 runs. Just to reset, if we recall, here's what Ryan Tepera had to say about the Astros.
They've obviously had a reputation of, you know, doing some sketchy stuff over there. And, you know, it's just, we can say that it's a little bit of a difference. You know, I think you saw the swings and misses tonight compared to, you know, the first two games of Minute Maid. But that's not really the story, you know. We come here to play. You know, we're going to compete. We're not even going to worry about what they're going to do. All we have to do is execute pitches, and they can't hit them anyways.
I feel like this is just ripe for some John McClain hyperbole.
One of the dumbest things I've ever seen a guy do, man, especially when you just had 6 runs scored on you,
yeah,
and then they scored 10 up there, he looks like a fool.
Yeah.
You know, he's from Houston. He went to Blinn and Sam Houston. And when he comes back down to see his family, I wonder what the reaction will be for his friends that were Astros fans. But you talk about putting a match to a hornet's nest. I'll guarantee you, when he said that, Tony La Russa's like, oh, my God.
His teammates, too.
That's the last thing we need is somebody to do something that idiotic. And then the Astros came back and stuck it right up where the sun doesn't shine.
Yep.
And I don't know. I don't know if he talked after the game. I'd certainly want to know what he thought about it based on what he said.
Yeah, I would think if he did that we would know about it. This I know. Carlos Correa talked after the game.
He said what he said. I encourage the players to when you're going to talk about other teams, just stay facts. You know, if you don't stay facts, then you lose credibility in this game. And, it's unfortunate that he had to say those words because we came out here hungry and he showed up.
John, how much fun is this group to root for?
It's great. I mean, everybody else is rooting against him. And I'll guarantee you, everybody that hates him has a grudging admiration for them. We're out 2-8 to get hit, come back, get a three-run home run, three hits overall, Correa playing great. You know, he absorbs it like a sponge and then turns it against them. And it's so much fun because they're so good. You know, this has been 5 years. And Tapera was right. They do have a sketchy reputation, but they haven't done anything since 2018. That was so insulting to Dusty Baker and James Click, who've done everything they can to clean it up, and they come within one game of the World Series last year. Now they got a chance to go to the World Series if they can beat the Red Sox, and I'm guessing the Red Sox are not going to call them cheaters much considering their manager,
no.
Alex Cora, was the bench coach and got suspended a year.
This series is actually very refreshing to two cities and two cities alone, Boston and Houston, and because we're like, what are we – like, we don't have to deal with anything. We haven't, because the Red Sox have to hear it too. They don't hear it nearly as much. I mean, gosh, the Yankees have to hear it to a certain degree because of their various cheating ordeals through the years. But I think the biggest thing that we've seen is there's such a clear precedent now. I almost don't like talking about it because I don't want people to finally learn their lesson. But whether it's Aaron Judge pretending to close up his jersey as he rounds third base, or it's Ryan Tapera making insinuations that frankly don't make any sense. It's like clockwork, John. The teams talk smack about it, crowds chant F. Altuve, and they get their comeuppance almost immediately. I'm nervous that opposing fan bases are going to stop doing it and that opposing players are going to stop doing it because it's such a magical little moment of retribution every time it happens.
Who do you think Yankee fans are pulling for? Even though they hate the Astros, they couldn't pull for the Red Sox.
No. I think they are pulling for
the National League.
Yes. Whoever wins the National League, I promise
you. They're way too busy trying to convince themselves that Daniel Jones is a good quarterback right now. That's how they're occupying their time.
Yeah. Okay, because
he had a few promising games earlier this season.
Do you guys want the Dodgers to win and get in the World Series in case the Astros get in the World Series? Because it isn't any better than the Dodgers and the Astros.
No, and here's the thing. San Francisco's a really good team, too. Like I wanted the Dodgers to lose in that wild card game to St. Louis. You know what I mean? And then that gets the Dodgers, you know, then St. Louis. I think most of baseball wanted to see St. Louis win that game to get the Dodgers out in one fell swoop. Now that the Dodgers are onto the Giants, honestly, John, I'll root for Atlanta in the NLCS because I want the easiest path possible to get another World Series.
I want the Dodgers and the Astros.
Yeah,
and the
I'm
Astros
a little. I'm kind of a wussy that keisters. Way. I'm kind of a wussy that way, John. I'm all about the W. I want the easiest possible route to the W.
If it's the Dodgers and the Astros, you think anybody will bring up cheating? Can you imagine
how many times? Yeah.
Oh, well, they might bring up how bad Cody Bellinger has been since he called out the Astros.
Oh, yeah. He was awful in that World Series.
He was.
Yeah, he had been. Right, exactly, which is why it was curious why he was the one that was yapping the most, and that since Major League Baseball really cracked down on sign stealing electronically, he's been atrocious. He was good in the World Series last year, but otherwise he's been really a mess. He's damn near a bad baseball player, especially compared to what he used to be, MVP.
I thought Tony La Russa made a fool out of himself. Number one, saying a guy on second base should turn and face center field so he couldn't steal signs, which goes back to the 1800s.
Yeah.
And then after the game, You know, I've never seen a guy hit somebody on purpose on a 3-2. And if you look at Graveman's reaction, he wasn't trying to hit Abreu. And Abreu, if he thought he was, he would have gone after him.
Yeah. Well, and here, look, you're four outs away from going to the ALCS. Like, you want to get caught up in chicanery that's going to get you suspended or fined with four outs to go. You're right. Graveman's body language on the pitch. It's funny, John, it's like you're looking at the rundown here. That's the next thing I wanted to bounce off of you was, and we'll play it for those who haven't heard it. Kendall Graveman hits Jose Abreu with a pitch with two outs in the bottom of the eighth. So the Astros are four outs away from their fifth consecutive ALCS. He's already thrown at least five pitches to Abreu at that point. He beans him. He kind of goes up high, but the ball got away from him. You can tell by his body language, Graveman's body language, that as soon as the ball left his hands, he started cringing because of the direction the ball was going. La Russa comes out and argues for no fewer than 7 minutes with the umpire. And Seth, you said this earlier, and I 100% I thought it at the time, and I agree with you. La Russa wanted to get kicked out, and the umpire was not going to kick him out because that's what La Russa wanted. The umpire that La Russa could have said the most ungodly, disgusting things about that umpire's family, and that umpire was not going to kick La Russa out of that game. Here is Tony La Russa following the game on what he thought of that hit by pitch.
Well, I questioned, you know, after they threw three pitches in there, why they should have just ejected him. It'll be a good test of the character and credibility of the winning team, because it was intentional. Catcher kept looking in the dugout, so that they hit him intentionally. And I'll be really curious. They should have the guts to admit that they did it. Why they did it, I have no reason to understand. You know, I only carry my sportsmanship so far, and I've gotten the limit. They beat us. They played better. We're disappointed. But that was intentional. And I don't understand why. I don't understand how they got away with it.
This guy
is one sore loser.
Is insufferable.
Now, I could understand him doing it at the time, trying to light a match under the fans and his team because it was almost hopeless. But to continue it afterward, that was kind of ridiculous. You know, just lick your wounds, leave with class, and his class was all third.
I can't hear through his garbled speech. Was he saying the catcher was looking in the dugout?
Yes.
He said Maldonado was looking in the dugout.
I thought he was talking about Graveman.
Yeah. Is it possible that Maldonado was looking in the dugout because Tony La Russa was yelling stuff at him? I don't know.
Anything's possible, but I could see where Maldonado might be looking in the dugout. Maldonado is chippy.
He's chippy. He might have been calling for the other thing about it is I'll cut La Russa a little bit of a break. I want to be clear about this and maybe get some clarification from whichever retirement home he stays in. There is a brand of vodka named Character Vodka, and maybe he's just complaining about a shortage of Character Vodka.
Okay.
Because that dude is he's a sloppy drunk.
He's a lush, yes, yeah. Absolutely he is. John McClain in studio with us, brought to you by HornSolutions.net. Astros, five straight ALCSs, and they will play game one on Friday at Minute Maid Park. John, did you see how much heat your friend Bill O'Brien is getting in Tuscaloosa these days?
I did see that after during the performance against the Aggies, and congratulations to A&M, and then afterward.
What's the silliest Bill O'Brien coaching rumor that you've seen circulating over the early part of the season here?
Well, first one was going to USC, which I don't think he would. And the other one came out yesterday that he could replace Urban Meyer in Jacksonville and coach Trevor Lawrence like he coached Deshaun Watson, and he'd go up against the Texans twice a year.
Oh, God, that would be so glorious.
That'd be great for talk shows, wouldn't it?
Yes.
You know what? It's an interesting theory, too, because just like Deshaun, Trevor comes out of that incredibly simplistic high school caliber offense that just happens to have awesome athletes on it all the time. It's a big leap from going from that Clemson offense to the NFL. It's one of the simpler colleges offenses out there. That maybe Bill he's seen what the challenges are, like what the pitfalls are. Maybe O'Brien, if O'Brien goes in and interviews for that job, he's going to say, hey, this is what we did with Deshaun. This is what I would have done differently. And it took Deshaun 3 or 4 years to really come into his own and become that complete NFL quarterback. I think we could actually ramp it up with Trevor because I've learned from my past mistakes. Boom.
How hard a sell is Bill O'Brien as a head coach to an NFL fan base right now?
I think when Bill's an impressive talker, like I think that if he sat down with an owner, of course, Urban Meyer's an impressive talker, but I think if he sat down with an owner and a general manager, now if I'm a general manager, I would not want Bill because Bill wants to be control personnel. And that was his undoing here. But he would obviously talk about winning four division titles in 5 years and Watson's progress and some of the progress around him. But, you know, that they would have a lot of trouble justifying some of his decisions on personnel.
No doubt.
You know, John, that's a really good point you make. And it makes me think about Tom Coughlin because when Tom Coughlin was in Jacksonville, he was, for all intents and purposes, the general manager. There's a team president named Michael Hugue at the time, but Coughlin didn't have the title of GM, but he was in charge of personnel decisions, and he wasn't very good at it. He was a much better coach than he was a personnel guy. He kind of like Bill O'Brien, when he started getting desperate, he just wanted to spend. And ultimately it led to them having to, you know, send people off in the expansion draft and whatnot. But then when Coughlin went to the Giants, he had learned his lesson, and they had an actual GM when he was there. So I wonder if O'Brien at this stage of life has that change in perspective to where he realizes he needs a GM and at the very least could pitch that to Shad Khan.
He could pitch it, but I know it's not true.
It's just impossible for him to coexist with a general manager at some point.
Unless that general manager lets him make all the personnel decisions, like so many. You know, there's at least 10 coaches who have all final say over personnel,
right,
even though they have a general manager who's a glorified personnel director.
So a tiger can't change his stripes is what I'm hearing.
No. Okay. Bill believes that the head coach has to have it like Belichick, where you have control of personnel.
Yeah. I'm going to talk to Bill about this next time I see him. I'm going to go get him. I'm going to go get a few drinks in him. I'm going to say, listen, Bill, this is the thing. Sometimes you just have to learn from experience. I was a pilot, John. I had my pilot's license for a while.
Wow.
And you know what I realized over time? I was going to kill myself and possibly others by some mistake I was going to make as a pilot. I'm way too absent-minded to be a pilot, so I grounded myself. And I think O'Brien needs to understand and realize he will literally get somebody killed at some point if he tries to be a general manager again. Somebody's going to drive into traffic because they've gone crazy from having to work with this guy when he's a general manager. He's got to learn and accept that he needs to accept a general manager to work alongside him.
I think he would say all the right things when the time came, and when he got it, like he said all the right things here with Rick Smith. And as soon as he got in here, he started wrestle. Control over Rick, and eventually he did.
John McClain in studio with us. He's presented by HornSolutions.net. John, the big story around the NFL this week was John Gruden resigning because of some of the things that were revealed in old emails from the Washington football team investigation. A lot of horrible things that Gruden said about a lot of people in those emails. Who else should be nervous right now about this? Do you think that there's going to be more people that get swept up in this when these emails, if and when these emails are made public?
Adam Schefter is being embarrassed today all over the country because it got out that he did a story on the lockout in 2011, and he sent it to Bruce Allen, the story in its entirety, and asked him if anything needed to be changed or added, and journalists are killing Schefter because you don't do that.
Oh, really?
So things are going to leak out that the NFL wants it to leak out, and the league's acting like it's not behind it, but obviously it is. So if you had correspondence with Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, anybody, then there's a possibility it could be leaked out. And Gruden used his private email. Bruce Allen used his team email.
Okay.
And that's how this happened.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Wait. Okay, so who used the private email?
Gruden.
Oh, okay. Oh, but he was using it, but he was sending it to
Bruce Allen. His team email. And that's how it got out.
Dude, oh my gosh, this sounds like. Do you remember that website they used to advertise on radio all the time? Ashley Madison.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
that website for cheating, like for married yeah. people that wanted to cheat?
It was like organized cheating. Yeah.
Do you remember when the client list got
yes.
leaked out?
Yes.
The thing about
you just knew there were people all over just sweating bullets.
100%.
So like right now, this is the NFL equivalent of the Ashley Madison disclosure. Oh, wow.
Dan Snyder is not a real popular owner, so I don't think he's got a lot of friends around the league. But if a couple owners were sympathetic to his plight, no telling what they may have emailed him.
Oh, my
and
God.
Bruce Allen had a lot of people around the league that he's known forever because he's been around it forever, first as an agent and then with the Raiders and the Buccaneers and Washington. So somebody wanted to get rid of Gruden, and that's the only thing that leaked out until now. We see this thing about Adam Schefter when ESPN put out a statement and saying they believed in, you know, the most important thing was to get accuracy, and that's what he was trying to do. But you wonder what will be next.
So are they out from underneath that contract now, the Raiders? Like, is he resigned, or do you think that they maybe settled on a figure or something
like
that?
You're talking about Bruce Allen?
No, Mark Davis. Like, now that Gruden's gone, that was a 10-year contract that they were four years into that was fully guaranteed.
Yeah, a lot of people said that wasn't fully guaranteed. It got out because Mark Davis wanted it out, and who knows? You know, he's a multi-billionaire, but I have no idea about the contractual obligations.
John, what's going on in the Chronicle this week?
I got columns, podcasts, stories. Brooks Cabina's got some great features out there, so we appreciate people checking it out. And Seth and Sean, thank you guys very much, as always.
Brooks asks good questions at press conferences. Let him know that.
Brooks is really good.
Yeah, he's very, very good.
He asks a lot of questions at press conferences.
And they're good ones. I'm happy for them. John, we appreciate it as always. HornSolutions.net brings you John McClain. All right, well, in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll have some of what Nick Caserio shared with Seth and I a little bit earlier, a few good nuggets from that interview. But up next, we got to celebrate. The Astros are on to their fifth straight ALCS. Let's relive the magic of a bludgeoning yesterday afternoon next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.